Podcast, the podcast for SeedSing.com. I am your host, R.D. Kulik, and with me is the, the Bob Zamuda? Is that Andy Kaufman's alternate reality? I guess you would be, I would probably be your Bob Zamuda, the greatest other host, Ty Kulik. How are you today, Ty?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing good. I don't know how that works out, though, like, which is what, because Bob Zamuda was angry, but Andy Kaufman was the genius, right?
Yeah, but I'm angry. And driving to my son to and from school, every now and then I have to tell him to please get me my gun.
Well, you don't even have a gun.
Well, it's video game logic. You want to live in a world where you can save and do whatever you want. That's why games like Grand Theft Auto are so, they're so gratifying. You get into a traffic accident or you get into traffic and you're like, hey, you know what? I'll just hit everybody with a rocket launcher. Yeah.
Just drive on this. Isn't there something in that game where you can drive on the sidewalk and like you get points for hitting passengers or something?
Well, there are games like that. Yeah, it's no. I mean, there is something gratifying though in Grand Theft Auto, like finding somebody on the bicycle taking up a car lane and just running them over. There is something satisfying about that.
I mean, I guess that's why they have bike lanes and cars have car lanes.
Well, today we were talking about a little bit more looser of a topic than I even thought before I started, but I came to this. We're talking about what I call or what we will call absurdist comedy. And I came to this because the moment this episode drops is the day before the third episode of Nathan Fielder's show, The Rehearsal. Have you seen the second episode yet?
I only saw the first episode. I know in the second episode that he accuses Paramount Plus of being Nazi.
Yes.
I know that.
Yes, he does.
The first episode was absurd enough. I understand that, but we have not, my wife and I have not watched this.
Okay. So for people that don't know, Nathan Fielder is probably the Andy Kaufman of our time. He is.
Yeah,
and I'll talk a little bit about Andy Kaufman in a moment here, but he is a very dry, I mean, I guess you would call him a comedian. He played what's-his-name, one of the guys in The Room. He played on the movie Disaster Artist.
He was one of the actors, yeah.
Yeah, and he was also on that, was the first like movie that John Cena was ever, everybody realized, wow, this guy's really funny, the Tour de Force one.
Yeah, I actually watched that the other day, and he played a guy who is like head of the IOC or UIC or whatever the cycle stuff is.
Nathan Fielder really, though, hit it big. He had a Comedy Central show called Nathan For You. It was real. It was a reality show, and he would help real businesses get more exposure. But kind of in the very first episode, he's working with a frozen yogurt place in L.A., and they decide to make a poop flavored frozen yogurt.
They're all covering their nose while they're making it.
There's
famously he did Dumb Starbucks.
Dumb Starbucks is right. It is probably the thing that put him on the map. And then Nathan For You was pretty popular. It was very well known, immense, especially amongst people that like that weird kind of humor. When I say absurdist humor, I'm like, I always define it as I will be watching it by myself. I will laugh and then I will say, oh my God, they did something. Well, he came back.
Like the Claw.
Yes. Yes.
That people, if you don't know, go look that up.
So
the Claw of Shame or something? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. But Nathan Fielder came back and I want to say it was around 2020, it was pandemic time, and he had a show on HBO called The Rehearsal, where he had people rehearse life events, and he would like make replicas of the places they were. He bought a house. He had he makes a lot of reference to spending all of HBO's money.
Yep.
And in the first season, it's like you near the end, you don't know if it's reality anymore or what it is. I mean, the last shot of the first season finale is his butt crack as he stands up to walk out of frame. This new season, he's decided that airline disasters are because first officers and captains or first officers aren't assertive enough to defy their captains. Mm-hmm. And so he built a recreation of the Houston airport. And he's using these first officers to do these weird ass experiments, these social like experiments. And it's without going too far into it because you haven't seen it, but he does. There's an episode of Nathan For You where he created a clothing line where all the proceeds went to Holocaust remembrance. You walked into these stores and there's a bunch of Nazi stuff there.
Yeah.
Well, Paramount Plus Germany took it down. And then it took it down all over the world. And he decides to rehearse him talking to Paramount Germany.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. And he essentially makes their offices look like a Nazi hall and has Nazis marching outside and stuff. So again, I don't know how much of this is real. Anyways, that's what...
Did you by chance happen to see the show he did for Showtime called The Curse?
No, I have not. Now, I know I that is...
every single episode of it. It is...
It's Emma Stone's in that.
Yeah, it's way, way, way darker than I think a lot of people thought. Not only is Emma Stone in it, Benny Safdie plays a main character too. So
didn't he create the show too?
Him and Nathan Fielder co-created it together with A24. But it is... It definitely veers away from comedy and goes way into like darker stuff, like the ills of wanting to be on TV so bad type stuff.
Yeah, no, I know about it. I definitely need to go see it. And we're going to touch a little bit on dark comedy, and I'll explain what I mean by that. But I want to really focus more on the absurdist. And I'm going to go way back, Ty, because when I was doing research on this, I'm like, really, is that it? Well, do you know what Dadaism is?
I've heard people talk about it. I have no idea I couldn't tell you the definition of it.
A little bit, we're going to do a very brief social history here, okay? In the early 1900s, so the first, up until about the Great Depression, there was a lot of things were happening, okay? And I often tell people there's a play written by Steve Martin called Picasso at the La Pinigile. The premise of this play is Pablo Picasso and Albert Einstein meet at a cafe in France and just talk. And there's other characters in it. Yeah. And even to the point, Elvis comes from the future. That play, it's a very, very good play. I often tell people that it represents what I think Depression Europe or was like. It was it was filled with a lot of big ideas, a lot of new things happening, and with that became a lot of what you would call anxiety, people feeling like anxious about what the future is. So Dadaism was this called avant-garde art movement, and then you also had like Art Deco came around this time and Futurism.
Heard that too. Yeah,
but probably, and I think the thing that best represents Dadaism or the concept of avant-garde or absurdist art is Marcel Duchamp. He has a sculpture called The Fountain. Okay.
The Fountain?
Yes. Now, The Fountain is just a urinal turned on its side with the word R Mutt written on it, the letter R and Mutt. That's all it is.
Oh, okay.
I have seen this thing live. I know what it is. That's all it is. But it's kind of, Duchamp was just kind of like showing the absurdity of art and what it meant to people. But it is like, if you saw a picture of a tie, you'd be like, oh yeah, I've seen that. It's probably one of the most famous pieces of art ever.
Okay.
That's kind of where a lot of this starts from. And then you have people, you have like the Marx Brothers, and especially their movie Duck Soup, which was fictional country who is going to be taken over by another country. This is the 1930s, by the way. Just the absurdity of like idiotic dictators. Or you have people like Charlie Chaplin, basically flat out aping Hitler to show how stupid Hitler was. But it was a dark time. People were like, well, Hitler's a dark character. You can't make fun of him. But Charlie Chaplin was making fun of him.
Yeah.
Where a lot of this really kind of in our mind, because I always like to keep this in our lifetime.
Sure.
We're going to talk about Ty comes from Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman. He's the first one who I saw do this stuff where I'm like, this is funny, but I don't know why it's funny.
Yeah. Andy Kaufman was born in 1949 and tragically died young of cancer, not of drugs or anything like that. Yeah. As a matter of fact, he was supposedly pretty straight-laced, like teetotaler. Died at the age of 35.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
Way too young.
And there is the Jim Carrey movie, Man on the Moon, is, I think it's very good, kind of.
Yeah. I agree.
Approximation of what or who Andy Kaufman was. But Andy Kaufman really, he was a comedian, but he would almost actively not tell jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Much like The Fountain, Duchamp's urinals sculpture, Kaufman, he would do things like he would go to college campuses, he'd put on the song Mighty Mouse, and then he would do some pantomime too. Wouldn't say a word, anything like that. Famously, one time, because that became big, everybody's like, oh, do Mighty Mouse. He decided to sit at a college and read the entirety of the book, The Great Gatsby.
That's pretty good.
He actively did this stuff, but he was very popular. A lot of people really, really liked him. So he got booked. We did episodes a few months ago about Saturday Night Live. He was on the very first Saturday Night Live doing the Mighty Mouse thing. He was on the show Taxi, where he created this fictional character, Laka, from a fictional country and had his own weird language and accent and everything. Again, very, very famous. Now, at the same time, while Kaufman's doing this, he had his manager, Bob Zamuda. They would create this other character named Tony Clifton, who is kind of this boisterous asshole of a person. And sometimes Kaufman would play him. Sometimes Zemuda would play him. I mean, if
didn't Paul Giamatti play Zemuda in the movie?
Yes, yeah. he was. So he was a weird guy. But on top of all that stuff he would do, he would get in public fights with wrestlers, Jerry Lawler, famously.
Yeah, big time.
They were on David Letterman together and got in a fight. And again, you never knew what was real. And he would go to places and say, he would do like small wrestling events, not the big ones. And he'd go to like places in Tennessee and he'd take out a bar of soap and it's like, this is soap. You guys in this town don't know what it is because you're all stupid. And then he claimed himself to be the woman's wrestling champion of the world and wild stuff. And again, even when Andy Kaufman died, people thought it was a sketch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There were people that are like, oh, he's not dead. He's just doing this for comedy. No, Andy Kaufman tragically died way too young.
Legitimately sick when he got sick.
But he was kind of the first one to really do this stuff. And then you take people like David Letterman.
What's the deal with old people? That's what I think about.
Or
stupid pet.
When Velcro was a big thing, he had the company that made Velcro make him a Velcro suit and he jumped on a wall and just laid there.
Yeah.
And Letterman for us, I mean, that was who our dad watched. And so in turn, we watched. And then Letterman gives way to like Conan O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
Who is still doing it, but it was this idea of just not telling jokes.
The whole concept of what's the deal with old people in big glasses is so stupid, yet I would sit there howling watching that with you and our dad and our brothers who are around. Like, it's just, it's so simplistic yet so hilarious for me.
Letterman gave rise to a lot of, like I just said, Andy Kaufman was on Letterman a lot. We did an episode, I actually re-released it last week, on Siskel and Ebert. He would have Siskel and Ebert on and, yes, talk about movies and things like that and make jokes about Roger Ebert's weight and everything. But they would go out like in the community in some Staten Island neighborhood and play basketball in somebody's driveway.
Yep.
And he would do these just incredibly strange things, but he knew how to tell a story. And the most important thing about comedy is you go watch the movie The Aristocrats. It's you have the setup and then you have the turn. This is what conservatives or the Republicans who are like, oh, we can be funny or things like that, they don't understand about comedy, is you need that turn. You don't go out there and say, gay people are stupid because they're gay, and then everybody laughs. That's just cruelty. Yeah, that's just
mean.
Yeah, that's just being a jerk.
And bullying people.
Right. You have to have that turn. People like Letterman, they understood that. Now, Letterman was in a world all of his own until, I want to say, I don't remember exactly what year this was, but I think it was early 90s. It was when I was in college. Somebody decided to take an old cartoon from the 60s called Space Ghost. And it was about this like space police guy or something. Yeah. They would take stock footage of Space Ghost, take all the bad guys he played or was fighting against. And like one of them was his band leader and one of them was the announcer of the show. And real people would go on and would get interviewed by Space Ghost.
Yep. I watched all it. And All Swim, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yes.
It was on,
But Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And these were real interviews. Real people were on there. And he would just ask the most asinine questions that meant nothing.
Mm-hmm. And then like mumble under his breath all the time, complain about people who were on there, people trying to steal his show and stuff like that all the time.
But Space Ghost Coast to Coast was really kind of the first instance I saw that I was be like, oh, now people will bring up Monty Python. All right.
Yeah, I've never gotten into Monty Python.
I'm not a big Monty Python fan either. And I don't call that absurdist humor. I call that British humor.
Okay.
I do think it's a little bit different.
I know our oldest brother loves the movie Life of Brian.
Yeah. And
he's a big fan of that.
I mean, and if I had to sit in a room and somebody said, we're only watching a Monty Python thing, what are you going to pick? I'm going to pick Life of Brian.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, that's the one where the idea of that movie is the exact same time that Jesus was born at a barn next. A baby named Brian was born.
Yeah.
And his life like mimics Jesus all the way up to
that's a good idea.
No, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the way up to the point he gets crucified at the end for literally doing nothing. And there's a lot of famous lines in there. Like one is all the Israelis or all the people from Jerusalem, like, you know, the Romans do nothing for us except the roads. Yeah, the roads. They do the roads. Those are good. But they do nothing for us. Well, what about education? Oh, yeah, education. Yeah, that's good. I don't find that absurdist in any ways. People also bring up Mel Brooks. I don't find that really absurdist ever. I think that's just broad comedy. So,
yeah, I don't know that, like, so I went to see a movie at the Arkadin here recently, and they showed a trailer before it for High Anxiety. And I do think that is a little more absurd, but yeah, like Blazing Saddles is just a straight up comedy.
Yeah.
Spaceballs is a straight up comedy, but I don't know, like, he might have some stuff in there that could be considered absurd. It's like, I've actually never seen High Anxiety. So watching the trailer was really cool. And I thought okay, they're like poking fun at something, but broad, I think, is good, because that's Mel Brooks is the best at just making these broad, hilarious comedies.
Yeah, and I thought of this because Collider had an article, the 10 best absurdist comedies movies ever made. And like Dumb and Dumber's on there. It's not absurdist. Blues
that's
Brothers.
Just a comedy.
Yeah.
Blues is just straight up comedy.
Yeah. The Lobster is on here. And I'm like,
that's a good movie.
No, it is a very good movie.
I don't know how much I laughed at it, but it's a good movie.
But they're number one. And I'm like, there's no way I'd call this absurdist. And people, you can disagree. Please do. But is the movie Airplane? That is just,
it's just like
pure comedy.
Yeah,
I mean,
straight out comedy.
Airplane, Dumb and Dumber. These are very, very funny movies that I watched and had thought, it's still to this day, I think they're very, very funny. But they're not.
It took our dad
weird
to see Dumb and Dumber. Didn't we run into you and a friend?
Probably.
Who's at that movie? Okay. I thought that we did that. And I know our dad hated it when he saw it the first time.
Now, Space Ghost Coast to Coast did give rise to Cartoon Network. First, they noticed that in Cartoon Network, so people know, back in the 90s, was cartoons. Was a lot of cartoons. And they'd have like the Flintstones on there, and they would have the Jetsons and all this other stuff. And then they noticed that they were getting really good numbers with the Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And people that were involved with it, they were connected to a lot of like up and coming comedians. A lot of them were like Saturday Night Live writers and people like Bob Odenkirk, or who's the other guy that he was with?
David Cross.
Yeah, David Cross, these types of people. And they had these little shows, and like Space Ghost Coast to Coast was 10 minute segments or so.
Mm-hmm.
So Cartoon Network decided that they were going to create kind of a more grown-up part of animation. Now, before that, MTV had their Liquid Television that Aeon Flux famously came from, and also Beavis and Butthead.
That, I remember Beavis and Butthead, but I don't remember a lot of that other stuff.
Yeah, but that wasn't, I mean, Beavis and Butthead was comedy, and again, I'd call that more broader comedy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Beavis and Butthead movie, they're at a park and the guy's talking about petrified wood. And he's like, how's wood get so hard? And they're all like,
which I thought was the
stuff
in the world.
Oh, no, that movie's still hilarious. I mean, that movie's still great. It wasn't this like weirdness. So,
yeah, with Adult Swim, I will get into a lot of weird stuff I watch.
Well, that's what they, Cartoon Network came up with this block. I think it was like after 10 o'clock or after 11 o'clock or something. And it was like 2 hours and it was Adult Swim.
Yep.
And you go look at like and we've done a podcast on Adult Swim, but you go look at those first few Adult Swim shows. Do you remember a lot of these shows?
So what I remember, like my gateway to all this quote unquote absurd comedy, was the first show I watched on Adult Swim. I guess I did watch Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but I watched Aqua Teen Hunger Force. That was my gateway. That was my entryway, because you have a talking meatball, a talking box of fries, a talking milkshake, and then their human named Carl. And it was just the most nonsensical, ridiculous stuff they would get into. And for the 8 to 11 minutes that it was on, I thought it was some of the funniest stuff I've ever watched in my life.
Oh, no. Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And most of you probably know what we're talking about. But if you don't, it's about sentient box of fries, a sentient meatball, and a sentient milkshake who live next door to some dude in New Jersey.
And who's a huge giant.
Carl. And the very first episode, they go out and they like fight crime or something like that.
Crime fighters.
Yeah. Every episode since then is them literally almost doing nothing.
Yeah,
or
just hanging out with Carl.
Yeah, or poor Carl getting like kidnapped by aliens or something. Yeah. And
the Moonanites, all that stuff on there. Like I there's so much from that show. I even dove kind of deep into the music career of MC Chris, because he would play these weird like alien spiders and babies on the show and stuff. And it was just nonsense, but this was before I had DVR and DVDs and stuff. I would sit up and wait at night just to watch Aqua Teen Hunger Force and like devoured it. One of my earliest dates with my wife, I took her to see the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie in the theaters because I was that obsessed. And I guess she must have liked me because we ended up getting married, but she agreed to go see that movie. She hated it. I loved it.
What was weird about Adult Swim also is that they would never promote these shows. They would just drop them. Nope. It wouldn't be like coming soon, Aqua Teen Hunger Force. No, it's just one night
enough to turn it on.
Yeah. One night, suddenly the show's on. They would do also, they had like C-Lab 2021, Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. These were a lot like Space Ghost, and that these were old cartoons that they're just repurposing for these just absolutely wild ideas.
When I was in and put big air quotes around this, a band in my early 20s, I would go to my friend's house who I played
the Red Shirt with. Freshman.
And we would watch Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and then we happened upon Metalocalypse one night. Which was, again, we just happened to turn it on, and it's like, this show is gory and violent, and the music is heavy, but it's also hilarious. And like everything Metalocalypse did, I found myself just wanting to watch more and more and more of it. And like, you get characters on that, their drummer's name was Murderface, and he had a tattoo on his neck that said, Po Buddy's nerfing, and just stuff like that. And I go hang out with our brother Seth, who's living in my area now, and like him and I will randomly say to each other that we do cocaine because that's what Roxo the Rock and Roll Clown would say on that show. So like all these things I happened upon that have now shaped my taste in comedy in this absurd family.
Where I'm going to start the second half talking about some of the live action stuff, because Adult Swim did move into a lot of live action stuff.
A lot of can't wait to talk about Too Many Cooks.
Yes. But they did do, I mean, they would bring things. A lot of people saw Cowboy Bebop. Again, that's not a comedy, but a lot of people first saw that on Adult Swim. So they'd bring these things over. And there would be also things, I think Samurai Jack was on there, the Star Wars. There's a Star Wars Clone Wars cartoon, but there's actually one that was made before by Jenny Tartakovsky, and he's the same guy that did Samurai Jack. It's very same style, Samurai Jack style, and they were these little like 5 to 10 minute clips, and it is great. It is actually on Disney Plus. People can go watch it. It's really, really good, and the entire series I think takes you like an hour to watch or something.
With the animated stuff, did you ever watch home videos on that?
I say home video. I was just about
heard John H. Benjamin.
Yeah.
His voice. And I was just like, oh my God.
But the one we're going to end on, probably the biggest mega hit that Adult Swim's ever had, that Cartoon Network's ever had, and that's Rick and Morty.
I don't like Rick and Morty.
I don't like Rick and Morty fans. Okay.
I don't like the show either. I just never got it. It's the same thing. I had the same problem I had with Archer. I don't get what's funny about it. It's the same issue I have with Arrested Development, too.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people like that stuff.
Yes.
That is not my cup of tea for absurd comedy.
I will tell you, so Rick and Morty, I think I watched through the first 3 seasons, and I've had no desire to go back. That has nothing to do with the quality of the show at all. It's weird how I'm going to equate it. I equate my relationship with Rick and Morty more like 30 Rock or Parks and Recreation.
Well, I love those shows.
No, and I know a lot of people do, and they were good shows. I just stopped watching because I felt like I wasn't there. There was nothing I was relating to. There's nothing. I mean, in the case of Rick and Morty, it's a lot of repetition. Okay. And I know.
Man, Parks and Rec seemed like a perfect show for you.
No, well, I don't like watching political shows. I don't. Right. It's just
a comedy. Though,
no, right. I know. I just don't. It was never my thing. But
yeah.
Rick and Morty. So the episode that a lot of people suddenly realize how awful their fans were is an episode called Pickle Rick, where
I read many, many an article about that episode.
Very briefly, Rick and Morty is essentially Doc Brown and Marty McFly from Back to the Future. If Doc Brown was a raging alcoholic and Marty was even more of a dweeb. And Rick is he's this super brilliant genius scientist, smartest man in all the galaxy and stuff. And the show's got an incredibly, and I mean incredibly deep, like story to it and everything like that all around. But this Pickle Rick episode, Rick accidentally turns himself into a pickle.
Is Rick the scientist again?
Yeah.
Sorry, okay.
And he essentially has to escape from like a South American drug lord's place. I'm going to tell you, Ty, it is a very good episode. It is very good. And at the end of the episode, it's actually Susan Sarandon is playing the therapist. Rick's daughter, they were supposed to go to therapy together, and he's still a pickle and basically sits there and he's late and his daughter's upset. And he tells like the therapist, you know, she's stupid. She's this, she's that. And she's like, look, I know to you, the smartest things I can do is like you wiping your ass. But that doesn't mean you're just smart. That just means you're a jerk. And a lot of the Rick and Morty fans thought, well, this woman's wrong. And that's where their toxic fandom comes in. Now, I think Rick and Morty, I just stopped watching because it's repetitive, but they have two episodes early on. I'm sure they've done it again about they're just stupid little filler episodes called Interdimensional Cable. Hooks their TV up to get cable from like all realities. And all right. In the same time, the who's his name? Dr. Spaceman.
Chris Parnell.
Yeah, Chris Parnell plays the voice of the dad, and he's kind of always down on his luck. And then their mom is a horse heart surgeon or an animal heart surgeon, not a pig.
Yeah.
So while they're watching their cable, their interdimensional cable, Rick's mom and daddy give them a headset where they can see themselves in different realities. And Morty's dad is he's like a huge movie star doing cocaine with Johnny Depp and all this other stuff. And his mom is a real heart surgeon, a human heart surgeon. Okay. But in this cable, they're just showing these random stupid shows. And one of them is a game show called How Did I Get Here? And it's literally them just teleporting people to weird places, like a woman on top of a light pole. She's like, how did I get here? He's like, how did you get here? But the best one, and just talk about pure absurdity, and my son and I to this day talk about this all the time, was a show called Man versus Car.
And, I've heard you guys talk about this before, yeah.
And they're always like, you know, up today is Big Billy Jim Bruiser. And it's this huge guy says against a car. And just this little regular car. And you see they're in the arena and they're like, oh, Billy's getting him. Oh, no, the car. Oh, the car ate him up. The car always wins.
Always.
And I think of that all the time because that's the kind of comedy that I like. I like this just pure. Again, they do the turn. The turn is the car always wins.
Always, yeah, because it's a car.
Right. Because yeah. I'm always, you know, people that are walking in the middle of parking lots and things like that. And I will say, if my son's in the car, I'm like, all right, it's time to do man versus car.
Yeah. See, it's like the thing that's going viral right now with like the 100 dudes against a gorilla or whatever.
Yeah.
A gorilla's going to kill them all.
Yes.
So maybe don't do that, people.
Say the gorilla will kill, for those that don't know, somebody put out who would win a fight between 100 dedicated men and one gorilla. And it's like, well, the gorilla will take the first 10 men, crush them, and then use those 10 men to kill the rest of the other men.
Exactly, yeah.
Hello all, this is RD, and I wanted to come in and say this episode of the Ex-Millennial Man podcast is sponsored by our Patreon. Go to patreon.com and look up Ex-Millennial Man podcast. You go there to help support Ty and I support the show, but it also, we're bringing out some exclusive content here for our patrons, so please come on over. Also, have some ideas for maybe a few giveaways, because don't you all want to be rocking your Ex-Millennial Man t-shirt, beanie, hat, whatever it may be. And also, the show is brought to you by Public Forum Productions. That's a network of podcasts that the Ex-Millennial Man is part of, along with First Watch Rewatch, High Heels in Politics, and then coming soon, A History of the 1980 Satanic Panic. So again, patreon.com, Ex-Millennial Man, Public Forum Productions. Thank you, and let's get back to the conversation. Okay, Ty, like we teased, and most people probably know, Adult Swim was not just cartoons. As a matter of fact, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, the interviews were real people. It wasn't an animated
TV.
Yeah.
They were on a TV
show. Right. It wasn't an animated thing. You would get these people who we talked about, David Cross, Bob Odenkirk. I mean, these people were kind of known, and they would get these deals to do little things on Adult Swim, or HBO would show a lot of this stuff. The Ben Stiller Show. Famously,
which I've never seen. I've got a great staff, though.
Yes, it does. I mean, you're talking, the people we're talking about, the legendary came out of this. And a lot of these people, they were, everybody's like, you're missing the big one, Saturday Night Live. First off, we did two full episodes not long ago. It. And yes, it is, but I wanted to get more into the, I mean, SNL has some absurdist things, has some very absurdist things, but these types of shows, and the first one I think is kind of the godfather of all this, is Mr. Show with Bob and David. This is exactly what we're talking about, this type of comedy. There were sketches. The one I teased before is The Devastator, the world's fastest roller coaster, goes 200 miles per hour. and two whole minutes underwater.
Well, and like this is what I was saying, like I found out about the show through my love of Comedy Bang Bang and Scott Aukerman, and then I went back and watched it. I'm like, this is just fantastic stuff that they're doing. And it wasn't just Scott Aukerman, like Starburns from Community was a guy who wrote on that show. Brian Posehn wrote on that show. Like these people who I consider these heavy hitters and people I really like now, they were my, as much as Metalocalypse and Aqua Teen Hunger Force was that for me in the animated world, those people were my intro to this live action absurd stuff. And like you said, the Devastators on there, everything, I feel like everything they did is just some of the funniest stuff that's been on TV for me.
Also around this time is when we're introduced to Tim Heidecker.
Tim and Eric.
Where Mr. Show was kind of a weirder SNL type thing, Tim and Eric was on a totally different level. And
it was as absurd as it gets.
Yeah, and it is the type of thing where, like, I couldn't recommend that show to people. I had to know the person in order to tell them, because most people would be like, what the hell is this?
I have a good buddy of mine who we share music and TV and movie stuff with. And again, he was the one who told me about Tim and Eric. And he was like, now I'm only, basically what you said, he said, I'm only telling you about this because I understand what you like.
Yes.
I wouldn't go to somebody and be like, watch Tim and Eric, good job or great job, because they'd be like, why is he showing me this weird cable access TV show? And that's not what it was at all. And I can't even recommend the Tim and Eric $1 billion movie to people, because that's as weird as the show, just spread out over 90 minutes. But I love everything. And all these people would be like, oh, you guys haven't talked about Steve Brule yet. That was born out of
Yeah.
Like that was on Tim and Eric. And then Steve Brule got his own show.
And Steve Brule was, who's the name of that actor?
John C. Reilly.
Yeah, John C. Reilly. This wasn't John C. Reilly's first thing. He was a big star. I think he had already been Oscar nominated for Chicago when he did this.
He's like a name when he did that.
And I'm not describing all these different skits and stuff because it's very hard to describe. If you're into it, go watch it. It's
hard to describe it.
But Tim and Eric gave rise to, what was it, Tom Goes to the Mayor?
Yeah.
Which was just, I mean, I talk about it, I don't really watch political shows. I'd watch that show. And it just crudely drawn, like, non-moving animated things. And it brought in all this stuff. But then one day, like, middle of the night or something, they show this thing called Not Enough Cooks.
Terrified me to no end. I didn't watch it that night, but I watched it the next day on the internet because people were talking.
Yeah, it was one of the big first super viral things.
It starts off so nice and so polite, and then it just gets dark.
Well, it's like a 1980s sitcom, but they keep introducing new characters, and then you start seeing this guy in the background, this creepy guy.
He's just there.
And then he like murders everyone, and even one of them, like the actress, still has her name, and she's running, and the name is running with her, like she's one of the actors on the show. And then it loops back into this whole 1980s sitcom thing again. It's like 6-7 minutes, and it just is one of the weirdest and I think most beautiful things ever made.
It is so scary. And even for me, this was like, all right, maybe this is too dark even for me when I watched it the first time around. But I get what they were doing. It just scared me because I am easily scared by stuff like that.
And these creators, we're talking about people that are getting some big careers. I'm moving on from Not Enough Cooks because there's two big shows I want to talk about, more recent shows. Both of these people are, they're names. People know who they are. People know who Tim Heidecker is, okay? They know who he is. He's made a pretty good career. But going
so
on...
So is Eric Wareheim.
Yes.
Don't forget him too.
No, right, yeah. But Tim Heidecker, okay, this started off as a podcast, I think in 2007 or 2008. He got a comedian friend of his, Greg Turkington, and they were going to do a Siskel and Ebert-like movie review show. But their podcast was just Tim Heidecker being an absolute wreck of a human being and Greg Turkington trying to talk about movies, who clearly knows nothing about movies.
I still haven't seen this show, and it's one of my paper friends.
Oh, my God. So it's been going on for almost 15 years. It started on Adult Swim, and then it went to on Heidecker's like Patreon, or it's basically his own site, and I subscribed to that just to get his show. So the show's called On Cinema at the Cinema, And it starts out the first, and like I said, it's been going on 15 years, and each episode's maybe 10 to 15 minutes long. And I'm just going to give you a super brief overview of the history of this show. So it starts off with Tim and Greg sitting there, like in a balcony, like Siskel and Ebert, reviewing movies. And every movie they review gets 5 bags of popcorn, and they throw in something else, like 5 bags of popcorn and 2 sodas or something like that. And,
are they reviewing actual movies on the show?
Yes, these are actual real movies. Now, Tim Heidecker is never prepared. He says everybody's name wrong. If he recognizes an actor, he'll be like, so Arnold Schwarzenegger, oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I know him. And it's clear he has never seen the movie. And he's always like, 5 bags of popcorn. The only movies he has given bad reviews to are the Ant-Man movies. And why do you think that is?
I have no idea.
Greg Turkington is in those movies.
Oh, is he?
Yes. He plays Paul Rudd's like boss or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Baskin Robbins.
Yes. So those are the only movies Tim Heidecker ever gives bad reviews to.
And I do want to go on with this Tim Heidecker thing, too, just because it popped in my mind. I recently saw him live.
Yeah. And the show his band
was called, well, the show is called The Two Tims. So he starts out playing this just terrible slick back hair, like late 80s, early 90s comedian who just has terrible jokes. And then the second half of the show is him playing a full concert with his band. So you want to talk about like, yeah, two sides of the coin. You get on. And it was, I cannot recommend people go see that show enough if it comes around.
Well, on cinema, at the cinema, and again, Greg Turkington is whenever we joke about clothes and fedoras, he's this big film snob. Through the,
he said he doesn't know anything.
Yeah,
about
but he, yeah, he doesn't. But he's always wearing, like, I'm wearing my Canon film shirt right now, but he's always wearing, like, a, there was a few episodes where he's wearing, like, 80 for Brady shirts. And
my wife wants to see that movie.
Greg Turkington has a, he always talks about his video cassette collection, and he has a foundation to preserve video cassettes. In the course of this show, Tim Heidecker has gotten divorced, gotten his nanny pregnant. That kid they had, which was named Tom Cruise Heidecker, got sick, but he has this really shady doctor, so that kid dies.
Oh, God.
So his nanny leaves him. He gets really into vaping, gets into his band.
Wow.
He creates a like 24 like patriotism type show where he's this super agent. And this is all in this show. He ends up, his shady doctor creates a special vape that his band does a big festival concert where 19 children die, 19 teenagers, from his bad vape. He gets arrested. His doctor commits suicide in jail. Heidecker gets, like, on a technicality, gets off. He ends up doing this movie called Mr. America, where he runs against the prosecuting attorney who is against him. One of the kids who died, his family gets control of Heidecker's media empire, so they sponsor his show. And during the whole time, Greg Turkington's always there. Oh, he ends up getting married to his lawyer. And
Tim Heidecker does?
Yeah. This whole deep, wild, crazy story. He ends up finding on his house this thing called raw water, which is going to be life-saving, and he ends up going into a coma.
God.
every year, though, On Cinema at the Cinema does an Oscar special, and it's a live stream of the Oscars, okay? And, like, one year, Greg Turkington dressed up as the Joker, and they always have special guests on and all these different people, and it inevitably, every single one turns into Tim Heidecker either throwing Greg Turkington off set, him getting drunk, them almost killing one of their friends. It is pure insanity.
It's just chaos.
Yeah.
Is what it sounds like.
Now, Tim Heidecker, like you said, he's a known comedian. He was also in the Jordan Peele movie, Us.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the last season of Eastbound and Down. I mean,
he was in the last season of What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah. So he is, he is a name.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
But the other show I want to talk about, Ty, is Between Two Ferns.
God, I love that show and that movie. And that is what I love so much about that show is how good Zach Galifianakis is just playing so aloof and making fun of. So much so that they had Barack Obama on and Obama was just going toe to toe with Zach Galifianakis. And even like the movie that they did was an early COVID thing for me. And it was just such a relief to have something like that. That's just so silly. That's the word I like to use with stuff like that is it's just silly. It's good to sit back and watch this guy make fun of comedians and make fun of actors, make fun of other people. I highly recommend people watch the episode with Steve Carell or watch him interview Paul Rudd, because it's just some of the funniest stuff that you can see on TV, on streaming devices. Just it's such a good show.
You said Barack Obama was on this show.
Uh-huh.
And it's just low budget Zach Galifianakis asking uncomfortable questions while they sit between two ferns.
My wife and I always comment because in the movie he has Matthew McConaughey on. There's a dip in the conversation, and Zach Galifianakis says to Matthew McConaughey, "All right, all right, all right." I wasn't quoting you. I was reading the box office release from your last three movies. It's just like stuff like that. It's so funny to me. Like I don't know. He had Awkwafina on in the movie, and underneath her name, it said rapist, but it was supposed to say rapper. Rapist is what he kept calling her the whole time. So it's just like, there's stuff like that, I mean, the Paul Rudd stuff is just fantastic because Zach Galifianakis says something to him about his Judaism, and Paul Rudd's response is, "I don't practice it because I perfected it." That stuff makes me laugh so hard every time I see it. And I cannot recommend the show enough. Watch the outtakes too. It is hilarious to see these people. Like, it takes so many times for them to not break. And this is another, Scott Aukerman directs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He directed the movie. So this is another part. Like, he's like the underlying thing in a lot of this stuff.
Oh no, and I'll get to comedy bang bang. But I did before, yeah. I forgot, I was looking at my notes and I'm like, between two ferns. Then again, part of this absurdist comedy is to just see how far you can go. But I think the show that has seen how far you can go is the Eric Andre Show.
It's my favorite talk show now that, you know, Conan doesn't do stuff anymore, mm-hmm. and Letterman doesn't do stuff. The whole idea of this show, I'm all in on Eric Andre. I even saw his live show, and it was, I saw people chugging ranch, bottles of ranch dressing. I kid you not, when I saw his live show, I saw them do that live. But the whole idea that he's talked about is they make the studio that they're in a little bit hot. They give these people alcohol. They kind of don't know what they're getting into. And Eric Andre and his crew just go for broke. They're going to do everything to try and get these people to break. And he's had famous people on there. John Hamm, Donald Glover, mm-hmm. Jaden Smith. Like, he gets these famous, famous people to go on the show and just sees how far he can push it, sees how far he can go to the ledge. And I know somebody like you, I've watched it because I'm incredibly liberal.
Mm-hmm.
You need to watch Eric Andre go to the Republican National yes. Convention and ask these questions, because it is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Again, Eric Andre's a name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these people.
Road Trip was one of my favorite movies when that came out.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Scott Aukerman. And mm-hmm. this is, I'm going to kind of wrap everything up with this, because if we think of the state of modern comedy. When we did our episodes on Saturday Night Live and we talked about how Saturday Night Live gave birth to Eddie Murphy and gave birth to all of these people, put these comedians on the map, Adam Sandler, things like that. And you could say they're doing the same today for people like Bo and Yang or mm-hmm. stuff like that. But Comedy Bang Bang, for going on 10 years now.
16 years, okay, actually, yeah. Next month.
Okay, yeah. So
I'm a diehard fan. That's the only reason why.
A lot of people listening to this, maybe you don't know who Scott Aukerman is, but he is the modern Lorne Michaels. He is the guy who is taking the best comedians, the best comedy, a lot of it absurdist like this, and putting them out there. And yeah. I cannot, obviously, I want you to listen to our podcast. And if you are listening, thank you, obviously. But Comedy Bang Bang is the alpha comedy podcast, network, whatever, anything out there. And everything there that Scott Aukerman touches is comedy gold.
It was my gateway into podcasting. Again, the same friend who mentioned Tim and Eric told me about comedy. I didn't know what a podcast was when he told me about all this stuff. So he had mentioned that. And yeah, the whole crux of Comedy Bang Bang is they have a famous person on, and it's like an interview talk show. But then Scott Aukerman always invites a couple of his friends to come on, and they play character. Everything's improvised. There are some of the funniest moments I've... So Drew Tarver is a pretty big actor. He was on a show called The Other Two. Now he's on Running Point on Netflix. And Carl Tart, who was on, I cannot remember the name of the NBC sitcom he was on with Nicole Byer, but I loved it. They would drink wine.
Oh, yeah. That show all the time. Wine Trip or something like that.
But I can't remember. But he's a writer for SNL now. And those two would come on and perform as this country duo called Memphis, Kansas Breeze. And they would sing songs about being in love with their truck. And it's simple stuff like that that just would make me crack up and I sit back. Patty Guggenheim was on one time and she played a sentient potato. One of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. Lisa Gilroy has been on a lot lately. She was in Jury Duty. She's on the new season of Black Mirror and she's on Running Point now. So he gets these lesser known people to come on and these people will goof around with Edgar Wright and John Hamm and Donald Glover and Rob Hubel, like all these people who I really, really respect to do stuff. They will come on, goof around with him, and then they inevitably get to be on some TV show because I'm sure people listen to these people he's bringing on. And while I love the interviews he does with the famous people, it's so much more fun for me to hear the friends he have come on and just hear these characters that they come up with out of nowhere. I do want to shout out Carl Tart again too, because he plays OJ on Comedy Bang Bang. And the whole idea with it is Scott Aukerman stopped following OJ Simpson after his football career ended. So he knows nothing about it. So they never allude to the horrific thing that OJ Simpson did, but it is just, it's so funny. I've seen the show live twice now. It's just an incredible, like, again, our podcast is the greatest podcast that's ever existed, but Comedy Bang Bang is my favorite podcast to listen to, and it's not even close with everything else.
So speaking of Comedy Bang Bang, there was a character actor who'd been around. He'd been on some shows. He'd done some episodes of Late Night with Seth Meyers as a character. He'd been on one season of Saturday Night Live. And this is Tim Robinson. He played a little part in an episode on Documentary Now. So he'd been around. He was well-known. He's a well-known comedy writer. He just didn't fit with SNL is what they said.
So I want, as about SNL, I want to ask you, what is my favorite character he ever played on? Because you and I have quoted this a lot.
Oh,
he played a famous person.
Yeah. Oh, is he? No,
he passes gas.
Yeah. No.
Skit.
I'm trying to remember who that was. I know exactly the skit you're talking about.
You have to. He calls it a juicy Busey.
Yeah, that's right. That's Busey. Right. Gary Busey. Yeah.
That was my first. Holy cow, who's this guy? When I saw him do that on SNL.
Yeah. Well, he ended up getting a gig from, was it Comedy Central or?
Worthless.
No. Detroiters.
Oh, yeah, that was Comedy Central.
Yeah, so he and, who's it, Sam Richardson?
Richardson.
Yeah, they did Detroiters, which is an all-time great show, people.
Such an underrated, I don't think
it's quite absurd to say, but it is a...
It is a hard comedy, and it is a hilarious.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would put it on par with, like, Workaholics, something like that.
I think it's better. I love Workaholics, I think it's better.
No, but I'm saying that kind of, or The Kroll Show even, something like that. So, more heavy or more comedy. And he got two seasons, but they didn't renew it.
Three seasons.
Detroit, I thought it only had two.
I thought it got three seasons. Oh, maybe he only got two, I don't know.
Well, he had this idea for a sketch show. Netflix decided to give him some money. And we talk about, like, Rick and Morty fans. I do get tired of the I think you should leave with Tim Robinson fans. Some of them, the loudest ones.
I don't know about it.
Well, no, but the ones that use a lot of the memes to be like, hey, aren't women stupid? But Ty, I mean, you obviously, well, I mean, I love this show too. And each episode, again, 10 to 15 minutes long, the very first skit and the very first episode is literally him pushing a door the wrong way, but...
Oh, it's not... here yesterday. It actually closes this way.
Yeah. And just staring at the guy and just pushing it till the door's ripped off its hinges. Wait. That's it. That's it.
Yeah. He's like doing a job interview and then it's just a close-up on him and the guy.
What are your thoughts on I Think You Should Leave?
I loved Saturday Night Live for a long time. I even watched Mad TV. I'm like way into sketch comedy. This is the best sketch comedy show that's ever existed, full stop for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the stuff that he and I mentioned his writing partner's name off mic with you, Zach Kanan.
Yeah.
I want to say it is, but the stuff that those two do together, it's so funny. It's so weird. We talked about Tim Heidecker. There's an episode that he's in multiple episodes. There's one where he's dating like this young girl and he's this old jazz fan and they're playing Celebrity and nobody knows the names he put in. Or another one with Tim Heidecker is he's out on a date at some like goofy restaurant where there's a person's head talking, like it's like an alien head talking, and it's making fun of Tim Heidecker, and he's going back at this thing talking about like my mom died and blah blah blah. Like, it's just but the best the best Tim Heidecker performance on there is when he's the doctor who wants to go clubbing with Tim Robinson's character. The interaction between them is incredible, but the show is so much more than that. He drives a Wienermobile into a suit shop in one of the skits, and he acts like, and he's got a Wienermobile costume on, and he's acting like somebody else did this while he takes clothes from everything, or trying to eat a hot dog during a meeting because you can't skip lunch, and he sucks it down. But you talked about the turn with all this. That hot dog eating thing comes back multiple times because mm-hmm. he does a commercial for making this thing. Coffin flop.
Yep.
That. The episode where he's out to dinner with old college friends and his old college professor eats his entire sandwich because he wanted the chicken sandwich that he got. Like, this is just little stuff that shouldn't be funny, and it's the funniest thing on television. I absolutely love this show. I have no. I mean, Andy Samberg showed up playing a game show where this red thing beats him up and takes his laptop from him, stuff like that. It's just this weird, absurdist humor that shouldn't work, but it absolutely 100% works.
No, and much like Andy Kaufman, it is. It's like it's the comedy that is non-traditional. I know I'm going to hear from some people, what about like the Chappelle Show? And I'm like, the Chappelle Show to me is again more broad comedy. And that's not an insult, okay?
No.
I mean, Dave Chappelle, I may think is neat. Yeah.
Humorous.
Yes.
I think You Should Leave stuff is, why am I laughing?
Mm-hmm. And then we talked off mic about, you know, Danny McBride and David Gordon Green and their kind of oeuvre. You've got, like, I would say of the shows they've done, which is, what, Eastbound and Down, Vice Principals, and now Righteous Gemstones is coming to an end. Vice Principals is a little bit more like dark comedy.
It's my favorite of the shows.
No, it's a good show. And and look, the spoiler alert,
very dark.
But Uncle Baby Billy in the last episode's praying over cocaine to give him strength and stuff like
that. Okay.
So hey, cocaine.
But, he got his ass kicked.
But again, I don't put those in the same category. And when I was watching, talking about the rehearsal and watching it and thinking, yes, this and that, and I Think You Should Leave, this is exactly what I would, again, I'm not going to recommend those shows to everybody. I'm going to have to know who you are. But a show, I will say, if anybody wants to know what I think is the funniest, the apex of what we would call absurdist comedy, is Andy Daly did this show called Review. I think it was on
Forrest
Comedy Central.
McNeil. Yes. Yeah, it was on Comedy Central.
It's Forrest McNeil, who his job is, he's a life reviewer. He would take questions from people to go review a life experience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they would be pretty mundane, but one of them was addiction.
Yeah.
Get addicted to something. Or go to prom. Now, this show, his character, Forrest McNeil, is married, has a regular life, and mm-hmm. he's always like, he gives a 1 out of 5 star or a half star to a 5 star,
half a star, yeah,
of what it is. Well, in the first season, and it's like the 5th episode or something like that.
Yeah, it's early on.
Yeah. The name of the episode is Pancakes, Divorce, Pancakes.
Just recently rewatched it from your recommendation.
His first review is, eat 15 pancakes. Because the guy's like, this box says it makes 15 pancakes. Could I eat 15 pancakes? And eating them, and he's like miserable, and he's just feels sick. And it's one of my favorite parts of that little sequence too, is when he's finally done, the waitress comes by and go, here's a check. And he's like, this is terrible, this is horrible. And he stumbles outside and he pukes all over the road. Yep. And it's just awful. Then the next review he gets is, what's it like to get divorced? So he goes to his wife and he's like, I want a divorce. And at first she's like, yeah. He's like, No, I'm serious. And she's like, why? He's like, you don't have to have a reason. And she's like, I've taken you through addiction. You went to that prom. I mean, you're going to die alone. You're a horrible person.
Going off on him.
And he's like, should I sleep on the couch? She's like, get out of here. And
living in his office.
Yes. It's an ongoing story through the show, his divorce and everything. But the third review, so he's miserable, he's broken. Third review is, hey, what's it like to eat 30 pancakes? He goes back and it's this like existential dread where he's like, yeah, these pancakes
but
can't.
They're playing like heroic. He's doing it too.
He's like, these pancakes can't kill me because I'm already dead. He's just sitting there. He eats them. He's defiant. And he's like, has his inner monologue, this like victory speech about how he climbed the mountain. He has pure clarity in life. And then custom puking all over that room.
Well, it's like you said, with how the divorce kind of plays a role on the show as it goes on. I watched the episode, I think it might have been the episode or two after that one, and somebody asked him what it's like to be Batman. Yeah. So he goes out as Batman, but he has to go to a mediation. Yeah. His lawyer, his ex-wife and her lawyer now, and he's dressed as Batman.
Review is a show that I'm afraid got lost to time. It's
so good.
It's streaming. I think speaking of Nathan Plus. Fielder and all that, it is streaming on Paramount Plus. All of Nathan for You is streaming actually on HBO Max, and it actually has the episode that Paramount Plus removed. I did go back and check. So yeah, there it is.
Summit Ice. That's the name of his.
Yes, yeah, Summit Ice. Yeah.
Nathan for You. I was trying to remember it.
So I guess my recommendation is even though we didn't really talk about it, The Righteous Gemstones ends the weekend this comes out. Go back, watch all of the David Gordon Green, Danny McBride things. No notes. They're all great. I have probably gone through Eastbound and Down 3 times. And everybody will be like, well, it's not as good as the first season. That show's great. And Vice
Put it all the way through.
Yeah. And Vice Principals, much like Review, I think is a show that's getting kind of forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And people shouldn't do that. But well,
people love Walton Goggins.
Yeah. He's having his moment right now. And So Ty, if they need you to, I don't know, be the is Hannibal Buress still on Eric Andre?
No, Felipe Esparza is now sidekick.
Or I know Scott Aukerman has a bunch of different band leaders. So he had Weird Al for a while. So
Weird Al, Reggie Watts, and Kid Cudi. Well, yes. Yeah.
Well, if he needs a new one, Ty, where's he going to find you?
Instagram and Facebook. Ty Kulik, TYKULIK, all lowercase. I do want to say, if you are looking for some way to get into absurd comedy and you've listened to this, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Comedy Bang Bang, and I think you should leave set with that right there. So check all that out. But you can hear me on a few episodes of Chucklehead Chat hosted by our buddy Glenn Adams. Check out my stuff on SeedSing, SEEDSING.com. A lot of stuff we talked about today, I've written about. Mm-hmm. So you can find all of that on SeedSing. Check out our Patreon. We've done 2 first watch rewatches that I think will stay with me forever this past month. So I want people to go check those out. But most importantly, you can hear me on this podcast, the Ex-Millennial Man podcast. Rate, review us, tell your friends about us. And as always, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, repeat all that. And I've gotten very good reception, actually, from a lot of people on our episode we did of Metropolis on First Watch Rewatch. And I posted it over here, too, so people on this feed know it. But you and I just did the 1986 Transformers movie.
Wild movie.
And there's just incredible stories, plus multiple hits of Stan Bush's awesome song, The Touch. So
you got the touch. Yeah.
But all right. Well, with all that, thank you for your ears. Anything else that you may use to listen to the Ex-Millennial Man podcast? Remember, we're here every Saturday for free, wherever you find your fine podcasts and shows. And that's all I got, Ty.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.
Kshana pujile athanga swapna lochani kana kana ta dekhile tuse sarup darpani.
The Ex-Millennial Man podcast is a production of SeedSing.com. Fully owned by R.D. Kulik & Associates, LLC. Producers Ty Kulik and Ryan Kulik. Adequately engineered by Ryan Kulik.